Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Evan Goyke, guest hosting. Maggie is on vacation. She has not quit. She's coming back in the near future. Before we get to our next guest, a little housekeeping and get your phones out. This is our Ride into Spring statewide contest. You can enter this contest using the Civic Media app, text to win. The word of the day is Chula, C-H-U-L-A, Chula, C-H-U-L-A. Text in Chula with and enter a chance to win a getaway to Chula Vista Resort, as well as a bicycle, a blender, and patio love seat furniture. Get your phones out. Text Chula using the Civic Media app and enter to win. Okay, so we're switching gears now on the Maggie Dawn Show. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome my boss, kind of, Representative Greta Neubauer from the 66th Assembly District in the city of Racine and the minority leader for the Wisconsin Assembly Democrats. Greta, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Evan. Really
All
happy
right.
to be here.
So normally the way this goes is Greta, I'm in the room and Greta's telling me and the other Democrats what we're going to do. But now I'm like the guest host with the microphone. Anya, we have the mute button. If we need to mute Greta,
That's
we
right.
can do that. So
I've got the sensor and the panic button ready.
This power is excellent. Greta, welcome. So what I wanted to have a conversation with you about today is many of the listeners are familiar with the fact that we've fought long and hard for fair maps and to end partisan gerrymandering in Wisconsin, and that has happened. So just give us a little review of where we stand today from your point of view as the Assembly Democratic Minority Leader.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all again for having me. I am pleased to be on my mentor, Evan Goyke's.
I forgot segment. About that. Even more powerful.
Exactly. No, really, really happy to be here. And of course, to be able to spend a little time talking about our work in the Wisconsin Assembly. So you all know that we have had some of the most, if not the most, gerrymandered maps in Wisconsin for over a decade. And what that meant was Wisconsin, a 50-50 state, voting just about half for Republicans and for Democrats in every statewide contest, had a legislature that was over two-thirds Republicans in the state Senate and just under two-thirds in the state assembly. And that was because our maps were so rigged in favor of Republicans that people across the state, frankly, were denied the opportunity to compete in competitive elections and participate in real democracy for a long, long time. And that had significant implications on the policy that was able to get done, on the strength of our democracy here in Wisconsin. In February, we got new legislative maps in Wisconsin. We finally, thanks to the work of, I'm sure, many of the people listening to this segment, as well as people across the state of Wisconsin who did not give up in the long fight for fair maps, we now have fair maps in Wisconsin. We have maps that mean that it is possible for Democrats to win a majority, and we have a path to a Democratic majority in the state assembly this year. And so, of course, we are hard at work talking to candidates across the state who are going to run in districts that have not been competitive for a long time. And people are thrilled to be able to participate in competitive local elections in Wausau, in Sheboygan, in Oak Creek, outside of Green Bay, all across the state. And so it's a very exciting time for us. And I know it's a very exciting time for voters, too, who finally will be able to have their preferences for state assembly and for state senate reflected in the outcomes of these elections.
Yep. All right. That was a great summary. I want to rewind in time a little bit. Right. So this lawsuit is filed. It's going forward. There were a lot of shenanigans by Mr. Voss trying to skirt the new maps, but ultimately they went forward. The governor signs it. I think people across the state, especially, you know, Democrats and those that have been plugged in for Fair Maps, celebrated. What did you do the very next day? Like, what has life been like for you as the minority leader after that decision?
I would say the next day I answered the phone all day long with people who wanted to run for office and who we have been trying to recruit for years and who were so excited that they would be able to compete in these competitive elections and hopefully serve in the state assembly and give their communities real representation. So we have literally had hundreds of people reach out to us and have someone else pass their names along and call them to talk about running in the 99 seats across the state that will be up this fall for state assembly.
I think it's great. It's a good reminder that every single assembly seat, all 99 assembly seats are up every 2 years, every even numbered year. So in November, that's all 99 districts. It is exciting to hear and to learn about the enthusiasm from candidates. You and I have been through a number of election cycles together, and it feels a little different having lots of people call you saying, I want to run, versus where we've been in other years calling and calling and calling, you know, getting somebody to run. So it's exciting for the enthusiasm. I want to pull the curtain back just a little bit so listeners can understand. You're the minority leader, but you're also the head of an organization with the acronym ADCC, which stands for the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee, of which I'm a member. It's a good member. Thank you. a retiring member, but a good member. But it's almost like a little union where we kind of put our efforts together. Tell us a little bit about the ADCC, its mission, and what you guys are up to right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So the ADCC is the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee, and our sole focus is on getting Democrats elected to the state assembly. We support our incumbents who are running for re-election, and we focus most of our time on flipping seats, on getting new Democrats elected. This year, our goal, of course, is to win a Democratic majority in the state assembly. That means flipping 15 seats from Republican representatives to Democratic representatives. That's a big lift. So we are busy, but it's also absolutely possible. Under these maps, Joe Biden won 49 seats. We need 50 in 2020. And Tony Evers won 52 seats in 2022. So we need to maintain that coalition of voters, and we need to outperform Joe Biden by just a little bit, probably in Wausau or Green Bay. Those are very likely to be the seats that are our 50th seat to win the majority this year. And so we have spent most of the last month on the phone and traveling around the state to talk to candidates, to find the best possible people to run in these seats, often local electeds, people who are well-connected in their communities, who have held leadership roles, and then who are also ready to get out and do the work. Our candidates are going to be knocking on doors just about every day of the week, and then they are also going to be raising money to reach voters in every way possible. So it is a hard job to run for state assembly this year. But as you said, it's really different than it has been recruiting candidates. People are coming to us and they are saying, I want to be part of this incredibly important moment in Wisconsin's history. I want to help win a Democratic majority. And then I want to enshrine our rights and freedoms in state law and pass all sorts of good policy to support everyone in Wisconsin to thrive.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, Greta. And I'm glad that you can share, and that I hope listeners are internalizing that the victory is only as sweet as the work we put into it in advance of November. That yes, there are new maps, but that in order to actually win, you need to have a candidate and you need to have a good campaign, and you got to go win that election. That the maps themselves do not select the candidates and the victors. That we actually all have to work together to do that, and that you're at the tip of the spear at the ADCC. I have a couple of other questions, but Anya, I just wanted, she said Wausau like a bunch of times.
Oh yeah, I'm over here silently pumping my fist every single time.
I saw
time.
That.
Yes,
Greta,
yes.
I don't know if you could see it, but it was,
I could feel it.
I hope Wausau feels it. That's the main thing. I need Wausau to feel what you're saying, Greta, and these silent fist pumps that I'm doing for them. Do you hear me, Wausau?
Listen up, Wausau. I thought it was Anya raising her hand to say she's going to run for assembly. Okay, no more fist bump. That was a one-fingered fist bump from Anya.
Your three-minute warning,
okay,
sir.
All right,
don't
okay,
worry about
sorry,
that part.
But it's a little blurry.
The
look conveyed it all.
Yeah.
Anya will not be on the ballot in November. She's too smart for that. So, okay, so Greta, we've got this ADCC. You're fielding phone calls. You're talking about Wausau. What are some of the other parts? We have a couple minutes here. What are some of the other parts of the state where you know, we have a statewide audience right now, people that haven't heard from or seen a competitive Democratic legislative election? Where are you focusing?
Yeah, so again, there are 15 seats we need to flip this year. Some of those are new seats that are pretty Democratic. One of those is in Superior. We've got a solidly Democratic seat up there. Representative Angie Sapik is not even giving it a run. She's hanging up her coat and saying, I'll see you all later. We have some other good Democratic seats around the state that where we are going to get new representatives. And then we've got a bunch of these competitive seats. Those include Wausau, as mentioned a few times. That is likely to be the deciding seat. Do Democrats have a majority or do Republicans have a majority? We've got seats in the Green Bay suburbs. We've got a new seat in Eau Claire. We've got a new seat in the Nina Menasha area in Sheboygan, in a good seat in Oak Creek and outside of Milwaukee. There's a lot of possibilities for us this year. And in the last couple of cycles, there have only really been a couple of competitive elections every cycle. Really 3 to 5 that were truly close elections. And this cycle, we could have 10 elections decided by a percentage point or two. And that means that it is going to come down to the work on the ground and to the support you all can provide to these great candidates who are running across the state. These elections are going to be close, and it's for all the marbles.
That's excellent. You've shared a number of communities across the state. Listeners in those communities are getting ready and fired up. When we come back, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to start launching Anya's campaign to never run a campaign. And then I want to talk a little bit more after the break, Greta, about how listeners can get involved and talk about the mechanics of running for a local election like state assembly. Thank you for joining us. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. Guest host, Representative Evan Goyke. See you in a few. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Once again, my name is Evan Goyke, guest host for Maggie, who has earned a nice break. Before I get back to speaking with Representative Greta Neubauer, I want to remind folks of the word of the day. This is the Ride into Spring statewide contest. You can enter to win a getaway at Chula Vista. This hour's word of the day is Chula, S-H-U-L-A, Chula. Text Chula, C-H-U-L-A, through the Civic Media app and enter to win a getaway to Chula Vista. You can also win this hour a bicycle, a blender, and a patio love seat. So the word of the day is Chula.
Close. This hour, you could win that trip to Chula. You're getting entered to win that blender, that patio, and what am I missing? A bike.
There's
a bike in there.
Okay.
Of course, to ride into spring on.
I've entered like 6 times already.
Oh, Lord.
So I want the blender, actually. Anyway, we're back. Enter. The word is Chula. Enter to win. We're back with Representative Greta Neubauer. We're talking about the new landscape for legislative Democrats in the state assembly. It's all on you, Wausau. I know you heard us in the last segment about the importance of the communities around the state, that some of whom have not had competitive assembly campaigns in the last several years. Greta, you and I have spent a lot of time campaigning over the last several years, a lot of trips in the car and door knocking and fundraising. Walk us through a little bit. There are a lot of people listening that are thinking, is it my time to raise my hand and run, or is it my time to get involved? Walk us through it at running for assembly and how people can help.
Yeah, it's such a good question. So as I said, we are having a lot of conversations with people who are interested in running for state assembly right now. We have candidates in a number of seats, but there are still places across the state where we are looking for people to step up and say that they want to run for state assembly. And as I said, the thing that's so exciting about this year is that it is going to be the year where we win a Democratic majority in the assembly and where we pass a lot of really good policy that is going to change people's lives. And so being a candidate for state assembly this year is truly a history-making endeavor. What it takes is people who are really ready to put in the work. Of course, we all have an idea of what a good candidate might look like, but often the best candidates are the people who are locally connected in their community, who have a lot of relationships, who maybe were teachers in their schools for an extended period of time, or ran for local office, or own a small business. Candidates are also the most successful when they have the time to put in to getting out and knocking on doors. And the thing that's unique about the state assembly in terms of the elections that will be on people's ballots in November is that state assembly candidates can actually get out and they can knock on the door of every single person who they need to vote for them in this election. And that makes a huge difference. We all know that there are going to be a lot of TV advertisements. The people are going to be hearing about the elections on the radio and getting mail in their mailbox. But what assembly candidates can do is actually get out and have those one-on-one conversations that we know actually change people's mind about who they want to vote for in this election. Those kind of conversations are most effective at getting someone who wasn't planning to vote to the polls and to change someone's mind from voting for one party to switching to supporting Democrats. And when someone gets out to vote for a Democratic candidate for state assembly, they're typically voting for everybody else on the ballot too. And so running for assembly is an amazing way to support all the Democratic candidates, Senator Baldwin, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, who are going to be on the ballot this fall and who need Wisconsin to be successful. So we are happy to talk to anyone who is interested in running for office or interested in getting involved as a volunteer and supporting our great local candidates across the state, whether that's hosting a fundraiser at their home or recruiting their friends to go out and knock on doors or make phone calls or write postcards or simply call that candidate every once in a while and say that you appreciate them and the sacrifices that they are making for our democracy. So please do not hesitate to get in touch with us if you would like to get involved with the Assembly Democrats. And our website is assemblydemocrats.com. Easy to remember. We're at the same handle on social media, and we are always happy to hear from people across the state who have ideas about who should run or who want to talk about running or who want to get involved.
Greta, thank you. There was a lot there for listeners, a lot of opportunities and different ways to get involved. And you're right, Greta. These are local elections. Assembly districts are just about 60,000 people or so. And when you break down that universe to the voters and you're really kind of talking to that group that gets out, you can walk it. You can go and talk and knock and meet people. And we've seen it. Greta and I have been a part of successful campaigns, flipping districts from red to blue, you know, thinking especially Robin Vining, Deb Ondraka, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, where, you know, this kind of grassroots door-to-door campaign really flipped seats and had a big impact in Madison. And as Greta has artfully laid out, the stakes or the opportunities are greater now than they have been before. Greta, how does if you're like me, you get texts from lots of people, and I get texts from the Democratic Party. How do you work with the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and what's the difference between the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee and the Democratic Party of Wisconsin?
Absolutely. So we'll have a really close partnership. That means that if anyone listening to this call walks into a Democratic Party office and says, I want to help out the state assembly candidate, they will be able to do so. We are going to run a coordinated campaign this year with the Democrats all up and down the ticket so that those volunteers can turn out voters for president, for Senate, for Congress, and for the legislature. And we're really grateful to have such a strong party in Wisconsin. We have amazing leadership in Ben Wickler and an incredible year-round organizing program that means that there are people out knocking on doors throughout the year. And that makes a big difference. Voters need to hear from us. They need to hear about the issues that they care about and how we are fighting for them, not just at election season. Of course, there's an election coming up just next week where one Evan Goyke and a number of others will be on the ballot. But the elections then continue right into August and November. And so there are going to be a lot of opportunities for all of us to get out, knock on those doors, eat some chili in Green Bay. It's so weird, you guys, but it's fun to try out all of the different foods available around the state by road tripping and then earning another bowl of chili by knocking on some doors.
And they allegedly have Kringle in Green Bay, but I've heard that it is substandard,
Huge feud with Racine. We simply do not accept it. We do not consider that to be Kringle. But we do have friends in Green Bay.
Yeah, thank you. And what I want to tell listeners, as Greta was mentioning, I think we have a lot of people listening that are motivated in November and want to make sure that former President Trump stays former forever. And that's good. And I am excited that folks are motivated to help the top of the ticket. But if you want to get involved, if you really want to learn a campaign and meet a candidate and know what it's like, and you have that itch to get involved, the state legislature, especially the state assembly, is where your efforts, the tip of the grassroots is the state assembly. And if you want information, as Greta mentioned, the Assembly Democratic Campaign Committee. Thank you for joining us, Greta. Keep up the amazing work. Good luck in November. We'll see you out there.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, I'm Evan Goyke, guest host to the Maggie Dawn Show. Be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Once again, my name is Evan Goyke, guest host for Maggie. I screwed up last time, Anya, and I want to clarify, and I want to remind folks of the word of the day. This is the Ride into Spring statewide contest. In this hour, it's entering to win the actual trip, the getaway to Chula Vista. That's like a lot better than I thought it was earlier. The word of the day is Chula. C-H-U-L-A. Use your civic media app. You can enter to win the actual getaway and also are entered to win a bicycle, a blender, and that patio love seat. Enter to win now. Before I get to our next guest, and I want to say thank you for the patience holding. I want to take one caller quickly. Troy from Mount Horeb. Troy, you're with us. Thank you for calling in.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I just wanted to ask what you guys think about, I think that this is we're going to really have a blue wave in Wisconsin because there are so many districts where Democratic voters didn't have a chance, so they stayed at home, where now all those districts were going to have a chance, and there's going to be a lot of Democratic voters that come out that wouldn't have come out in the past.
Yeah, I think, Troy, I think you're right. You know, I've been a part of a couple of those in my time. And just to acknowledge what Troy is saying, he's saying blue wave in November. Yeah, let's do that. I'm good. I'm ready for the blue wave. In my neck of the woods, Troy, in the suburbs of Metro Milwaukee, especially in communities like Whitefish Bay and Wauwatosa, we're seeing that huge transition, but it really accelerated when there was an opportunity to win. And so I think Troy has some is really right that when those local races are possible, things catch fire. And let me just marry what Troy is saying with what Representative Neubauer just talked to us about and tell tell the listeners why Troy's right. Because when those it's those local grassroots campaigns like the Assembly that bring out the volunteers, the postcard writers and the door knockers and the phone callers, and they reach into the community deeper than a national campaign can or that TV ads or Facebook ads can. So Troy's right because these districts inspire volunteerism and candidacy of people that then bring out those Democrats that otherwise are sometimes convinced that there are not a lot of other Democrats around, but there are. So thank you, Troy, for the call and the comment. I think you're right. Let's go Blue Wave. In the studio now, a very good friend of mine. This is, I think, also super consistent with Maggie and the Maggie Dawn Show and her consistency in really trying to educate and bring issue area experts onto the radio. And in the studio today, a good friend of mine, Edgar Lynn, who is with Protect Democracy. Edgar, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, Edgar, you're an attorney. You're now kind of, you're not a politician, but you work with politicians because you have to. Tell us about Protect Democracy.
Sure. Protect Democracy is a cross-ideological nonprofit group dedicated to defeating authoritarian threat, building more resilient democratic institutions, and protecting our freedom and liberal democracy.
That's pretty good. All right, I'm in. All right, so you talked about, I think the words you used were defeating authoritarianism. Touch on that, just expand on that a little bit more.
Sure. In preparation of this, I Googled authoritarianism.
All right, what does the internet say? They were watching that search,
That's right. So Wikipedia says, a political system characterized by the rejection of democracy and political plurality, which means the enforcement of strict obedience to authority at the expense of personal freedom. And so we're against that.
Me too. It sounds a lot like someone that used to be in the White House and we're going to make sure is not in the White House ever again. Okay, so this organization, tell us a little bit about how it was formed in defeating, I couldn't agree more. So the response is to create Protect Democracy.
Sure. Our co-founders are Ian Bassin and Justin Florence. Both of them were former White House counsels under the Obama administration. Ian was in charge of the administration's democracy portfolio. He saw troubling signs when then-candidate Trump was saying the stuff he was saying that was fundamentally different than the norms of our institutions. And so shortly after that, Protect Democracy was founded. It started off with half a dozen lawyers, and now we've grown to 100 people.
Wow. And so you have a presence here in Wisconsin, and that's you. You're the Wisconsin guy protecting democracy. And I know there are other allies. You're not the only one protecting democracy. So walk listeners through, you know, what you do and the vision for your work as a part of Protect Democracy,
sure.
Kind of the local focus.
Sure. So we are cross-ideological. I said that earlier, and I just want to emphasize that because democracy requires everybody involved. And this is funny. We have some of our members, some of our staffers, senior members of the Elizabeth Warren campaign and the Ted Cruz campaign. So it makes for a funny—
Interesting. Yeah, interesting happy hour at the company retreat.
Very interesting Thanksgiving dinners. But I guess I'll start off with the problem. The big problem is that our democracy is at danger. We now have more people living in authoritarian regimes than we have in democracy. Back in 2010, 48% live in an autocracy. Today, 68%.
Wow. And you're talking globally.
Globally.
So, yeah, this isn't just about Wisconsin or the United States, but globally. Say that stat. Just go back and say that stat again. So 48% when?
2010 and 68%, I believe, 2020.
68%. Okay.
And so I bring about the global example because we are not immune. Authoritarian comes from the left. It comes from the right. We see authoritarianism come from the left in Latin America. We see authoritarian come from the right in Eastern Europe. And there's not, you know, there's not one answer to this. There's theories, there's books written about it. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the theories. Yeah. So theory number one is that Western democracy is not delivering the goods. So changes in income in the last 30 or 40 years around the world, globally, the lowest 80% of the global population, the labor market, saw a significant rise in their income and their purchasing power. These are folks who are making $1 or $2 a day. Yeah. Then the top 1% also saw a huge growth in their income. But the global 80 to 90% is stagnant, if not declining. In other words, the middle class in liberal democracies in the world. And what the middle class wants is the government we're going to get. If they want a monarchy, we'll get a monarchy. If they want a whatever they want, we're going to have. And so that percentage is seeing that, or that group of folks is seeing the American dream not coming into fruition. The other theory is what they call the atomization of society. All that means is that we are more individualist than we are collectivist. And there's a chart about that. 130 years ago, we had, during the Gilded Age, extremely individualistic.
Sure.
Democracy.
The robber barons and.
That's right. Yeah. Democracy not working for the populace. You saw the progressive movement, the populist movement come in response to how it's not working. And then we became very community-minded in the 60s, which is probably why the Beatles sang, you know, Come Together.
Right.
And then the end of the 20th century is this allure towards wealth, allure towards Gordon Gekko from Wall Street, that wealth, greed is good. And so we've become much more atomized, meaning individualistic. And for the folks who say social media is a problem, that actually is an accelerator to atomization. And then the third theory is sort of the backlash to demographic change. I think that speaks for itself. There's more, you know, there are folks who believe that maybe there's ideologies about racial superiority, or maybe more benign, just this discomfort of the changing demographic. And then there's a theory that says it's all of these, because we can't pinpoint to one. And so what one thing we see is that authoritarianism is growing, and we wanted to see, how do we spot an authoritarian? And we came up with something called the authoritarian playbook, which is all the authoritarians, they use the same tactics. We're talking about Xi Jinping, Viktor Orban, Maduro, Donald Trump, Putin, same tactic. Do you want to hear them?
Yeah, I want to hear them. this is deep, everybody. We are, and if you're just joining us now, we are deep with Edgar Lynn, who's with Protect Democracy here in Wisconsin, talking about authoritarianism, going through some theories, and now he's going to tell us the playbook.
So here's the—
Fire away.
Yeah, here's the authoritarian playbook. One, they target vulnerable communities. Two, they quash dissent. Three, they stoke violence. Four, they spread disinformation. Five, they corrupt elections. Six, they politicize independent institutions, the FBI, civil services. And then finally, they aggrandize executive power. They can commit crimes no matter what. Quashing dissent, you know, stoking violence, targeting vulnerable communities. These are all things that create sort of, they thrive in an atmosphere of anxiety, fear, and chaos. And that's why the world is seeing this rise of authoritarianism. And we don't want to, you know, there are times when there's political jockeying. You know, somebody will say, oh, the left and the right, they're just arguing. That may be true, but we also want to look at the authoritarian and liberal democracy axis. Look at these factors. If they're present, you're looking at the eye of an authoritarian.
Anya, you doing okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm good.
I'm like a little terrified.
Oh, I hear
playbook,
this stuff every day.
No, that
the whole world's
just, Yeah. No, that playbook, well, for a minute, I thought Edgar was just reading news from the last couple of months.
Oh, yeah.
What I appreciate about this conversation, Edgar, is where it's deep. It's not, it's real. and it's serious. So you have this playbook. You can kind of identify some of these sources or where there's a landscape that may foster the rise of authoritarianism. It's good to identify it, but I assume Protect Democracy wants to help prevent authoritarianism from rising here. So help us identify, you know, what strategies or what policies or what efforts, is kind of where I want to go next. So where we see these things happening, what do we do about it?
So, there's, you know, Protect Democracy is one organization. We couldn't do everything, but some of the things we're looking at and the things that we are doing is, one, protecting elections, protecting free and fair elections, regardless of who wins or who loses. You've heard about these folks in Arizona, armed militia folks standing in front of drop boxes, intimidating voters. That's something we got involved in, and filed a suit, issuing an injunction for them to stop that. Then there's defending the rule of law. We have to make sure that the law applies to everyone, whether you're the president or you are election worker, Shay and Ruby Freeman in Georgia, which, just another example, we represented them against Rudy Giuliani and had that historic judgment. So those are some of the legal aspects. There's countering disinformation, and we have to work to build a better democracy for tomorrow. And so, yeah, those are some of the big buckets of things we are doing in, and I talk a little bit about Wisconsin too.
Yeah, we're going to get in. Yeah. We're going to take a break in a second. If you're listening, I'm joined in the studio today, right now, by attorney Edgar Lynn, who works for Protect Democracy. They are helping to identify, prevent, and squash authoritarianism. We went deep. We went back to philosophy school. We talked about some theories and some playbooks. And when we come back from the break, our conversation is going to be about some efforts in Wisconsin in the state legislature to enshrine some of these protections in our elections and make sure that we do not have a landscape that would foment the rise of authoritarianism. We'll be right back on the Maggie Dawn Show. Guest host, State Representative Evan Goyke. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Once again, I'm guest host Evan Goyke, state representative from the city of Milwaukee. I confessed my error earlier. I'm just going to remind folks this is an opportunity right now. The Ride Into Spring statewide contest. You can text to enter to win a trip to Chula Vista this hour, and also enter the broader, longer contest to win bicycle, blender, and a patio love seat. Get on the Civic Media app, text the word of the day, Chula, C-H-U-L-A, Chula, C-H-U-L-A. Text in Chula now and enter to win. Before we took a break, our conversation was with attorney Edgar Lynn with Protect Democracy, talking about the rise of authoritarianism worldwide, the playbook of an authoritarian to create a landscape that would be more welcoming for the rise of authoritarianism. And where we just ended, Edgar was mentioning about a focus on elections. And so that's where I want to pick up in our final segment today. So Edgar, Protect Democracy, you're an attorney. What are the things that you're working on or looking out for? And maybe just touch on the importance of elections in as it relates to the earlier conversation about preventing authoritarianism from rising here in America.
Sure. So I lead Wisconsin's advocacy work. I'm also counsel. And so what that means is legislative advocacy, one, two, research policy work, provide recommendations for Wisconsin, and three, as counsel, I am involved in, obviously, litigation readiness. So one thing I'm looking at, and I think we all are, you know, this is a big election year in November, is preventing election subversion. And so that's another term.
No, go ahead. This is good. I mean, this is an educational program. We try to take on tough, deep legal issues and deconstruct them so the listeners really understand what's going on. So election subversion, keep going.
election subversion is an authoritarian tactic aimed at corrupting elections by preventing the true winner from taking office. It's a little different from voter suppression, where it's laws that make it harder to vote. They're two sides of the same coin. They can impact each other. So the things I'm looking at is election subversion. Some of the examples that we've seen in Wisconsin, you know, improper legislative audits of, we've all heard of the, you know, the Gableman investigation that Speaker Voss called the worst choice of his life.
I did like listening to Speaker Voss admit that. I could add a lot of mistakes to that. But anyway, so yeah, keep going. Gableman wasting all that money.
Right. There's been some talk about these hand count procedures. They're just unreliable statistically, historically, factually. And so hand counts procedure, you know, refusal to certify election. That has not happened in Wisconsin. We've seen it in other states. We've seen it in Arizona, Nevada, where certain bad election denier local officials decided they don't want to certify. The court promptly told them, you know, ordered them to do so because there is no grounds for it. And so for us, we, in terms of, so those are the things we're looking at. Oh, yeah, I define election subversion. Yeah. That's right. Okay, good. And so looking at the laws in Wisconsin, this session is mixed in terms of what we have done to erect these guardrails. One thing that is I deeply care about, and I think a lot of people care about, is threats to election officials. Yeah. We have heard horrible stories about them. You know, it's a job. It's a clerical job. They're just doing their job, and they shouldn't have to take these threats home with them. When the threats come to their home, recently I heard Claire Whittle of Milwaukee saying that some sort of threatening note was left at her house with a map of drawing of where everybody sat in the election commission. That's terrible.
That's terrifying.
It's terrifying. And that goes to them, election deniers or authoritarians, in sort of trying to, you know, politicize these independent, you know, folks, and corrupting our elections. So one thing we were working on is enhancing their protections,
sure,
whether it's to their ability to get into a confidential voter system if they were harassed, whether it's the ability for election officials to have private cause of action instead of relying on the state. And you were a former criminal defense attorney, the high burden of proof that an individual can not burden the system and sue on their own behalf. Preventing people from harassing them, because under our statutes, election threats are all geared towards voters, and that's all good. We want those preventions.
Sure.
But nothing was made for election officials who
are... And we have that in other areas, right? Threatening a judge or, you know, threatening a prosecutor or police officer, but that kind of heightened protection has not been extended to election workers.
No, and it's not. And it's scary because I was at a forum recently with it's a bipartisan sort of forum with the leaders of the election committee in the assembly. And a gentleman raised his hand, an elderly gentleman, saying, you know, he's been a poll worker for all his life, you know, as a grown adult. And he doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
He's scared.
Yeah.
This is a volunteer.
And that's the purpose, right, of those threats and that intimidation, is to just kind of to throw chaos into the system by not having these people raise their hand to serve their community.
You're exactly right, because there's a national survey that says 40% of election officials are in key states are anticipated to are either considering or are leaving their post. And think about the loss of institutional knowledge. Anything you do, you take away 40% of your workforce, and you have to train new people. That's a problem. That's going to clog up the system. And that's a big threat. Unfortunately, that bill did not make it. It has survived both committees unanimously, actually, but didn't make it ultimately for a vote. The other one is making sure we conform with federal law. There's a law called the Electoral Count Reform Act that Protect Democracy certainly was helpful on that from on the federal front. And that does a few things. It sounds really nerdy. It's
I'm a nerd, Edgar. Come on. We're Anya, nerd.
I'm a bit of a nerd.
Okay. All right. Real quick, we got 1 minute left.
Okay. And that is really to, you know, make sure that the vice president, for example, doesn't have the discretion to pick fake electors. It raises the threshold for congressional objection or objection by Congress and stuff like that. And then there are parts that the state would have to follow in terms of timelines.
Well, we got to wrap up right now. I just want to summarize by saying thank you, Edgar. Thank you, Protect Democracy. I'm a little less anxious now knowing that Edgar and Protect Democracy are on the front lines willing to sue and work on protecting our election workers and our democracy and preventing the rise of authoritarianism. This has been a wonderful afternoon, everyone. I am so glad that I came in. Again, Evan Goyke, state representative in the city of Milwaukee. It's been my pleasure to be the guest host for the Maggie Dawn Show. We'll see you next